In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
All right, welcome everybody. This is the Energemetra 6 podcast. We are on episode, I believe this is 33, is that right?
Sounds right.
It is 33, yeah, we're on episode 33, and we're starting part 2 of the Veil of Mysteries. We're going to be going into the interval and then chapter 10. Welcome to all of our listeners, welcome to Luke and Mel, and all of the ones who are going to be, all of my kids who are going to be participating today, and to our listeners, thanks for being here. Let's go ahead and hit our V for V, and then we'll get going. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value-for-value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. All right. And I'm actually, as an explanation here, I'm on my tablecloth today instead of my normal backdrop because I am in Missouri. We're going to be going to the Teach Them Diligently in Branson this coming weekend, and then hopefully back home for a while. That'll be a good thing. It'd be good to be home for a little while. With that, I guess it's about time to dive in. So we are going into part 2 of The Veil of Mysteries, Purpose. Interval. Her nervousness was obvious as she opened the door and quietly stepped inside. That was just fine by him. It wouldn't do to let one's associates get comfortable. Comfort bred weakness. The windows at the top of the great spire glinted all around them. The air was cold up so high. Allowing the grand office to remain cold as well had been a conscious decision long ago, when his hold on power had been less secure, when even this world was still dangerous. It had been a statement then. Now it was merely habit. But it suited him. There was always the danger of getting too comfortable himself. She actually bowed before she spoke. Her lips tightened ever so slightly. The news must be dire.
My lord, we've looked everywhere. I'm afraid they've escaped.
Dread thickened her tone, and she glanced reflexively up at his face. His laughter was genuine for once. It rolled up out of his belly to fill the space around them with his merriment, and her eyes widened. Not what she had expected.
My lord?
Yes, yes, of course they've escaped. But one of ours went with them this time. She paused then, uncertain, and he enjoyed the touch of fear that still lingered in the air. After a time, he continued, letting a trace of annoyance slip through his calm. Can't you see what this means? It means we can follow them!
Yes, my lord. The effort is proceeding apace. The Brotherhood is spearheading recruitment and draining of the soul.
No, no, you fool! He frowned as she cut off abruptly, then began again after a long silence. We can follow them now. We needn't wait for a gate. Don't you see? The great masters have shown us the way. When they pierced the barrier between our worlds, they gave us the pattern. Now all we have to do is follow it. He saw understanding take hold, and he nodded almost gleefully. It had been so long, and the answer had been in front of him the whole time.
But, my lord, what about last time? We still don't know what happened.
For a split second, he considered putting her in her place, but her horror was genuine, so he simply stared at her, his gaze hard. After a long moment, he saw her swallow uncertainly. Then her posture firmed, and she simply looked him in the eye. He nodded once more. Paul Kassizier is dead, and his obnoxious protege, well, he can no longer interfere. Our path is clear.
In that case, my lord, how should we...
She trailed off, still uncertain. He stroked his chin thoughtfully. That is the difficulty. Now we know at least two of the rebels got through. This is chapter 10.
History is only a lovely story until it starts to repeat itself. Then it's an abyssal nightmare.
Attributed to Wilford Standish at the beginning of the Atarian Dark Age, year 4 NST. When the veil started to visibly clear almost 50 hours later, they all gathered on the bridge for the spectacle. They could actually see wisps of cloud around them, sucking inward before disappearing into nothing, and they watched for nearly a half hour as the last of the veil finally disappeared. As the final streamers were fading away, Andrew eyed Nate.
So, where are we actually going?
Nate looked around, then shrugged. What we need is resupply. Does anybody know where the nearest port is? Jesse's mouth twisted in distaste, but Kevin nodded almost excitedly.
Yeah, that'd be Bounty. If you pull up your magic star chart, I can show you where it is.
Jesse eyed Kevin with some irritation.
It's pirate infested.
Kevin looked almost shocked.
It is not. I've been there. They're a bit unconventional, but they're not pirates.
Jesse didn't look convinced, but before he could speak again, Laura piped up from one side of the bridge.
What are pirates?
Jesse turned his head to stare at her, dumbfounded.
What do you mean, what are pirates?
Laura blushed and started to mumble something, but Shannon turned to her with a smile and said,
Don't worry, we didn't know either when we first got here.
Jesse shook his head.
I keep forgetting.
Pirates,
Ty said grimly,
are people who hurt other people so they can take their ships and cargo. Sometimes they even space them.
He didn't go on, but from his tone of voice, it was obvious that something in his past gave him more than just a theoretical knowledge of the subject. Laura looked horrified.
But people spacing other people just to take their stuff? That sort of thing hasn't happened since before the betrayal.
Ty scowled.
It happens here.
Laura shook her head in disbelief as Nate looked to Jesse. What makes you say it's pirate-infested? Jesse frowned.
That's what everyone at Sanctuary always said.
Kevin scoffed, waving his UPT in front of him in a gesture halfway between fidgeting and emphasizing his point.
You mean that's what the Council told you? Those old hulks wouldn't know a pirate if he came up and bit them on the collective hinder.
Nate held up his hand to stop the conversation and asked, Kevin, if they're not pirates, then what are they? Kevin shrugged.
They just don't like authorities much. They wouldn't steal from you unless maybe you're flying a Dominion tax ship.
Nate nodded. Good enough. And while we're there, let's get a real star map. His mouth quirked. Not that your sensor composites aren't great, but it would be really good to know where we're going.
And some real food, too.
Ty added.
You were right, Andrew.
He made a face.
The spinach gets old after a while.
After Kevin and Jesse examined Adamant's original sensor composite map and found what they both agreed had to be Bounty, Shannon told them the trip took a full day even at maximum Retton drive. It was an uneventful trip compared to their voyage inward through the Vale, with none of the white-knuckled attention that going through the muck had entailed.
All hands, disengaging Retton drive in 10 minutes.
Shauna's voice warned them when their trip was nearing completion. Nate was on the bridge with Andrew, Kevin, Laura, and Rachel, with the rest of the group variously sleeping, going through inventories to make lists of supplies they needed, or spending personal time elsewhere on the ship. The second planet from the system's primary was the only inhabitable world, and Andrew set them on a course for it without commenting or asking for instructions. As the Retton drive disengaged and he finished adjusting their course, Andrew looked at Kevin quizzically.
So, do we dock at the space station or land on the planet?
Andrew asked. Kevin shrugged, waving toward the window in front of them with his UPT.
People don't want to live without gravity. And since Sanctuary has the only space station I know of with artificial gravity, people tend to make their homes and do their business down on the surface. The only people who use the space station are industrial haulers and the like.
Andrew nodded and made some minute adjustments to their course, then asked Shauna to look it over for him as he glanced over at Nate.
What did you have in mind when we land? Do you want to find a place to sell our salvage? What do people use as currency here?
Kevin shrugged again.
Everybody takes Dominion marks. There are others, but the Dominion has the best reach, even on Bounty.
He glanced at Nate.
If it's all the same, I know a few people here. I think I can handle the salvage.
Nate nodded.
All yours. Andrew, you may want to stick around and help. I don't know what the custom is with unloading, but I suspect having locals aboard Adamant unsupervised may be a bad idea. See if you can find us a decent star map and more provisions, too, will you? I'm going to look around the city.
Kevin gave a wave of agreement, and shortly after they received a hail, which Andrew answered, adjusting their course once again to follow flight control's directions to an unoccupied berth at Bounty City Spaceport. Even before they'd begun re-entry, Kevin took advantage of a weightless moment to cross the bridge to a control station. By the time they landed, he was happily tapped into Adamant's comm system, looking up his contacts. After they touched down, Nate unstrapped and stood up to stretch, then made his way off the bridge. John, Rachel, and Ty were all in the corridor outside, and they eyed Nate quizzically as he passed.
We're heading out to see the city,
Shannon said from behind him. Nate turned to give her and Laura, who had both followed him off the bridge, a half-smile, as Rachel and Ty both perked up at the news.
I want to come, too,
Ty said. A moment later, Rachel chimed in with a somewhat more dignified,
I'll come.
The spaceport outside was much like the one on Eteria, composed primarily of a giant paved landing field centered on a flight control hub. Unlike Sea City, however, Bounty City fully surrounded its spaceport with warehouses and import-export companies. Making sure to stay well clear of other vessels, Nate headed out of the spaceport to the north, toward the city center. Their little group stayed close, partly because they could sense Laura and Shannon's discomfort at the tremendous amount of open space around them, and the increase in crowds as they left the spaceport. Nate caught Laura looking around in wide-eyed amazement and smiled at her. Are the open spaces getting to you? Laura smiled in return and shook her head.
I know Shauna has agoraphobia. Not me. I'm just amazed at how many people there are. I thought Lighthouse Station had a lot of people on it. I never thought this was even possible.
Shannon nodded a bit less happily.
Yeah, it's amazing they don't, I don't know, kill each other or something.
Ty grinned, obviously enjoying the girl's new experience.
They do, you know. Sometimes. There's at least some murder on all cities.
Shannon looked shocked, staring at Ty in horror. Then her expression faded into wariness, and she stared around suspiciously, causing one nearby pedestrian to actually shy away from them. Ty laughed.
Not often, and usually it's people who know each other. Murdering strangers just doesn't happen much unless they're caught in some kind of crossfire, especially kids.
He made a face. Nate eyed Laura, then asked, Your psi talent, what does it show you in a place like this? Laura made a face.
Well, I'm getting a little emotional overspill. There are a lot of people, but I told you, I never trained it.
She shrugged, still looking around in wonder. Shannon's suspicious watchfulness had subsided a little after Ty's explanation, and it looked like the girls were slowly getting accustomed to the crowds. As they walked, Nate noted the people around him. They didn't have the friendly, curious look the people of Sanctuary had, but all of them were cheerful and courteous enough. The obvious bifurcation of the society on Eteria between Telestics and everyone else was nowhere to be seen. But perhaps, he thought wryly, that was because he wasn't in the company of a high-ranking Telestic. Sure enough, it wasn't another full minute before he spotted a figure in Telestic's robes cutting a wide berth through the crowds that packed the street. Nate saw his friends were all looking in the same direction, but none of them commented beyond a quiet snort from Ty as they passed. After they'd been walking for a few minutes, Laura asked aloud,
How do these people govern themselves? There's just so many of them.
Ty laughed.
Most of the worlds around here follow the Telestry's model, even the ones that aren't actually Telestry worlds.
What does that mean?
Laura's tone showed clear interest. Ty shrugged.
Well, they mostly don't have governments. The Telestics enforce the laws and help settle disputes. People pay them for their time, and they render a service. Mostly nobody crosses them. Local stuff, like policies, are mostly discussed at the Conclave.
They all have conclaves? Like Sanctuary?
Laura asked. Ty nodded.
Yeah, that's where all the important stuff gets handled. They tell stories there, too. Like on Sanctuary.
Ty stopped for a moment, then laughed and made a face.
Before I joined the Telestry, I saw a rebroadcast from the Conclave at Skelter at Eteria's Conclave. It was pretty awful. Usually Conclaves only broadcast to their local solar system. But sometimes if people really like something or they really hate it, we'll rebroadcast from other systems.
As they'd been talking, they were approaching an amphitheater that they all immediately recognized as an outdoor rendition of Lighthouse Station's Conclave. Instead of being built above ground, this one was open to the air and set down below ground level with obvious provision for lighter material to be extended over the top to create a roof. Shannon glanced sidelong at Nate and snorted.
At least here they don't have an airlock to throw you out of.
Nate laughed, then shook his head and smiled grimly. Touché. This is what I came here to do, though. I have to tell them what's coming, and this is where we start. Rachel looked across at Shannon, her eyes dark.
If somebody does try something, well, we came with you this time.
When they had descended the steps from the rim of the conclave to the center, Nate took his place in the waiting area below the speaker. A Telestic with robes that marked her as senior among her order. She was practically haranguing the crowd as she spoke, her voice shrill.
Of bounty? You accept the services of the Telestics, but what of your duty to the Telestry? We, who have given our all in service of the people, pledged our very lives to the Telestry, are in our hour of need. What have you done for us? A pittance for the tithe, you count. Yourselves well served? Balance requires more than this. The day may come when we are not here to be your guardians or magistrates. What will you do then, you who have so little gratitude? Upon the next full conclave, we demand your support. Bounty must join the Telestry.
With that, she stepped down from the podium and settled herself in a nearby seat set apart from the rest. obviously a place of honor, perhaps reserved for the one in charge of seeing that speakers did not become too unruly, or overstay their welcome. Nate's lips twisted ironically as he stepped up to the podium. He began with a long, thoughtful look around the amphitheater, which was neither packed nor empty. Evidently, there were enough locals who could spare the time to frequent the conclave to keep it busy even on a business day. The crowd obviously wasn't expecting much from a boy of barely 12, as they saw him. They were laughing and talking, completely ignoring him. The previous speaker, now settled in her seat, eyed Nate doubtfully, but no one else was there to speak, and she didn't seem prepared to try to stop him. Nate began in a tone that cut through the noise, providing himself with an unobtrusive boost through Energemetra 6 as he had at Sanctuary. "I have a tale for you of the time before the escape." He paused for effect, and the crowd began to quiet. He looked across the conclave, meeting the eyes of as many in the audience as he could. "Before even the betrayal, the way men lived was very different than it is now." After another short pause to let the crowd quiet the rest of the way, Nate could see that he had their attention, and he began in earnest. "Before Energemetra 6 came to the hands of man, people measured their power over one another by other means. For some, it was how expensive their ground car was. For others, their house. For the very powerful, it was how much gold they held." A ripple of laughter spread across the crowd, and Nate smiled a crooked smile. "You laugh because gold is so common today. But this was before space was firmly within humanity's grasp. There was no mining of asteroids or moons, and the only gold men could acquire was pulled out of the depths of the earth with great labor and toil. And so men measured their power by the size of their stack of shiny metal, and those with great amounts of gold treated the others as slaves. Society was different when there was no nuclear fusion, and men were used as beasts of burden, women as household automata, simply because they had less gold than their neighbors or their masters. Society was different, but people were the same. All they needed was an excuse to hold others as lesser than they." Nate shook his head. "Then the virus came. One day the greatest standard of power was gold. The next it was Energemetra 6, and then a man's worth could be measured by how much power he could personally control. The world changed overnight, and those who had treated their neighbors as worthless were suddenly the lowest slaves themselves." As he spoke, Nate raised his hand, and a great ball of light grew above it, growing brighter and brighter until the audience was forced to look away. Then the light faded, and Nate stared around at the bedazzled crowd. His eyes raked them, looking for the few who showed no signs of bedazzlement, the energemetrists, and staring them down, one at a time. A moment later, Nate shook his head again. "As it was before, so it will be in the time to come." He paused and looked around slowly once more before continuing. "Those who hold great power because of their ability with Energemetra 6 will lose that power in time. Take care, you who lord it over your neighbors, because of your strength in the fields. The time will come when you will be brought to serve, willingly or not, and woe to you who treat others as lesser because of a power you were born with. There is always a reckoning. In the end, Energemetra 6 is a tool, nothing more. What matters is whether it's used to aid people or enslave them." Nate paused, reflecting on how many things would have to change for people to be able to accept what he had really come to do. There was too much that opposed him, and there was the enemy, unseen but always present. That enemy was the other reality these people couldn't even imagine. When he continued, Nate barely knew what he was saying, only that those enemies were in the forefront of his consciousness. They needed to be told. He spoke about the proper use of the fields and recounted again how Energemetra 6 had been given to men by the Lightmaker to prevent all of society from being enslaved by Lastus and the Shades. Most of all, he spoke about the Shades and their change and the threat they posed. As time passed, the conclave began to fill with more and more people, as those in the audience contacted friends, or perhaps those who were watching the rebroadcast came to see for themselves. By the time Nate finished, almost 2 hours later, Every seat was full. As Nate stepped down from the podium, the crowd was completely silent. Slowly, a few people began to applaud, then a few more. Soon, the crowd was on its feet as Nate strode away from the podium. The noise was deafening, and it continued even as Nate neared the exit. As he passed, a man leaned out of his seat and grasped Nate's arm, calling out above the roar, "Are you telling us the Dominion will pay for what they did?" Nate stopped and looked down at the man in his seat, cocking his head. "The Dominion? What did the Dominion do?" The man looked surprised. "Why, they killed all the Telestic trainees, haven't you heard? The Acrolucum is empty, and the Telestry's been humiliated." Nate stared at the man, dumbfounded. Behind him, his friends had all stopped, and Rachel, at least, had heard what the man said. Nate didn't move for so long that Ty came up behind him and poked him. Nate didn't respond, and by now the man who had grabbed Nate's arm was looking more than a little uncomfortable under Nate's blank gaze. Rachel looked over at Ty and jerked her head at the man who had spoken.
"He says the Dominion killed everyone at the Acrolucum."
Ty's eyes went wide, and he looked at the man.
"Do you know why? Did they say why they did it?"
The man was looking at Nate with realization now instead of discomfort, and he nodded. "Yeah, they said the Telestry was harboring the Bright Star." Nate sucked in a sharp breath, but didn't say anything. There was a small crowd behind them now, so after a moment, Rachel put an arm on his shoulders and gently guided him forward. The whole group started moving and didn't stop until they were outside the conclave, walking down the street. When Rachel finally released him, Nate stopped again. He glanced over at Rachel, a sick look in his eyes. "It's because of me." Rachel shook her head grimly.
"Not your fault. It was the Dominion. Come on, Nate."
Nate nodded. "Still because of me." He shook his head in turn. Rachel opened her mouth to speak, but nothing came out. The others were clustered behind them, equally silent. Then, with none of them knowing what to say, a small voice just in front of them piped up.
"You look sick. Are you gonna puke?"
The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like Crisis Pregnancy Centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.
All right. And that concludes chapter 10. Thank you, everyone. Good job, Fifth, and good job, everybody else. Thank you, Mel. Thank you, Luke. Thank you, Second and Third. And thank you, audience, for being here. And we will catch you all next week. Next week, we'll not have a live show. We're going to be releasing a recorded episode because we have people who are busy, but... you know, God willing, it should be out on time, and looking forward to it. We'll catch you then.